This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
And welcome. You're listening to the Hindus in Focus podcast. Over the last few days, we've been trying to get you as much information as possible, as much insight on what we are seeing at the line of actual control now, the disengagement between Indian and Chinese troops that we are seeing the first phase of having been completed or is about to be completed, according to officials. With me to discuss just what this means and what this means for the future of India-China ties is Shyam Saran. He is former foreign secretary, former advisor to the prime minister, former chairperson of the National Security Advisory Board as well, and joins us now. Mr. Saran, straight away, what is your reaction to the deal we are seeing that has been announced on LAC disengagement?
Thank you very much, Suhasini, for having me on this program. My reaction is that as far as one can see from whatever information has been conveyed so far, that this is a good, a positive first step in terms of a complete disengagement along the line of control. But as you know, the devil lies in the detail. And of course, we are not quite certain how the phasing for the rest of the LAC is going to be conducted. We had earlier been given the impression that the Indian side was holding out for disengagement, not sector by sector, but along the entire LAC, which would include the hot spring area as well as Depsang. But clearly, we have agreed to phasing with the Pangkong Lake area, both north and south, having been taken up for disengagement as a first step. I would say that it would not have been in either India's interest or in Chinese interest to have this very prolonged standoff with large forces deployed against each other, and that too in very inclement weather conditions and inclement terrain conditions. So to that extent, I think it suits both sides to have initiated this process. But as I said, first step, we will have to wait and see what happens with subsequent steps.
All right. As you said, it is the first step. And there was the impression that at the beginning, India was holding out for a full vacation of all the areas where Chinese troops had transgressed, had aggressed at the line of actual control. And now we are doing it in phases. Are those concerns also about the sequencing? Because, for example, it has been well known, and army officials have said, that for China, one of the big reasons for them to consider talks with India and for a little more flexibility, the leverage that India had, was the heights that India took sometime in August, where we've even heard from army officials, senior army officials at GOC and C, saying that the two sides came the closest to a possible war when the Chinese troops realized that India had occupied certain heights there in what are called the Kailash ranges. Now, the real concern is that having vacated the Kailash ranges as we are doing in phase one, that the leverage left for the other phases is in fact has been taken away. Are those concerns valid?
Well, the point is that, as I said, what is the overall deal? I mean, if the vacation of the Kailash ranges is part and parcel of a larger deal where we go back, if not to the status quo ante, substantially to the status quo ante, and we do at the end of this process manage to get disengagement along the entire line of control, then perhaps as part and parcel of that process, one could say, yes, this is fine. But if we have vacated these heights And later on, we find that, you know, our expectations of Chinese disengaging or going back in other sectors is not, in fact, borne out by what happens on the ground, then yes, we would say that this was not such a clever move on our part. But my sense is that, you know, there has been, in fact, perhaps an overall agreement for disengagement along the line of control. By the way, I'm not very sure that this represents going back to status quo ante, which has been, in fact, also a certain constant, you know, demand made by us. But, you know, it would appear that we are more focusing on restoration of, you know, peace and tranquility at the border rather than, you know, saying that we should go back to what the situation was, you know, around April last year. So one would also have to see what ultimately results from this, whether we are going back to status quo ante. My sense is that, you know, it is not as if we are going back to status quo ante. For example, the kind of, you know, no patrolling zone that we have created on the north bank of the Pangkeng Lake, that means that, for example, our patrols cannot go to areas that they were regularly going to as a result of this agreement. Yes, you could argue that this also means that the Chinese side will not be able to come to, you know, Finger Four like they were before. But it does mean that from our side, there are areas that we will not have access to. Government says temporarily. Now, again, we would have to wait and see if this is temporary, what is the eventual agreement that is arrived at with regard to, you know, patrolling. So it is I would say, still somewhat unclear what the you know, main features of this understanding is. Again, I go back to what I said. As a first step, maybe, of a process that has been agreed to by both sides, it is a good first step, even if it has meant that we have clearly climbed down from our earlier insistence that there cannot be this kind of phasing and that we will not come back from the Kailash Ranges until we have satisfaction with respect to the rest of the LSE. So to that extent, clearly a compromise has been made.
And of course, some concerns you had earlier spoken about the parallels to perhaps the Doklam situation in 2017. You know, there's been there was a disengagement that was negotiated between the two sides, and yet it didn't lead to the kind of behavior on the Chinese part that India had expected. In fact, China doubled up on its infrastructure on the Doklam Plateau, as well as what we saw, you know, pictures of possible villages coming up in those areas. So do you think there is a way to safeguard against that kind of reverse in the future?
So the experience of Doklam quite clearly means that we must not take things, you know, at face value. Because as you mentioned in Doklam, although it is true that we did manage to prevent further ingress on the part of Chinese forces in terms of the road building, subsequent events would seem to indicate that they have just gone and outflanked this entire area by building roads in other other areas in the same region. You know, that experience shows that, you know, we have to be very cautious, very, you know, alert and fully aware of what is really happening on the ground.
Right.
I think only then can the process of, you know, rebuilding a certain degree of confidence, a certain degree of mutual trust can come about. There may be various reasons why the Chinese, despite in a sense being in a dominant position, have agreed to perhaps engage in this disengagement. And perhaps we should also analyze that because that will be certainly very much part of the story going forward.
Sure. In fact, that was going to be my next question. When you look at all the possible reasons for China's decision to disengage, despite the fact that, of course, since August last year, we had seen several announcements that the two sides had agreed to disengage. First, the National Security Advisor had spoken to the special representative there, also the foreign minister. And then we saw army commanders speaking about disengagement. And yet it took nearly 6 months to actually see the first disengagement. So is there speculation about what China's reasoning was to now at this point agree? Some have suggested that the change at the top in Washington was one of the reasons.
I'm not quite sure about the Washington part of it, but you know, any such major decision cannot be ascribed to one single factor. It is usually in our experience that a number of, you know, perhaps not necessarily very closely connected factors come together to, you know, in a precipitate a certain decision. Now, in this particular case, the question we need to answer first is, why did they engage in this kind of an exercise in the first place? You know, it was perhaps not necessary for them to engage in this exercise and jeopardize what was shaping up as a, if not a friendly relationship, at least a stable relationship. So it is important for us to try and understand why this happened. The Chinese system is very opaque. We can only speculate. We can't really come to definitive conclusion. But my sense is that number one, they were very, I think, surprised and angry about what happened in Doklam. I think they were taken by surprise. And, you know, they had to, in a sense, after having taken a very tough stand, they had to, in a sense, back down somewhat. And I relate that to, you know, the fact that soon there was going to be a BRICS summit. It could have been an embarrassment. So it appeared that a decision was taken to try and, you know, if not disengage, at least not let the situation escalate. But it rankled. Now, here in Ladakh, I think their original sort of decision may have been not to engage in a large-scale operation, but to do what they have been doing in the past, which is to, you know, nibble here, nibble there, you know, put the Indians under pressure without really this being a high-risk operation. Right. Now, I think what was meant to be a low-cost, low-risk operation on their side, which would have, to some extent, changed the ground situation, and Indians would have found it very difficult to, you know, deal with that. I think what happened in Galwan was not part of the script. The fact that, you know, there was a kind of a clash between the two sides, lives were lost, something which was sort of low cost, low risk, suddenly, you know, blew up into a very major kind of an incident. And here I find that evidence for the fact that this was not part of the script is the consistent effort on the part of the Chinese side, unlike Doklam, to play down, you know, the incidents there, to try and, you know, keep the rhetoric at a fairly, fairly, you know, temperate level. The contrast is very, very, you know, clear. So what I see is that The Chinese side meant this to be a sort of a strong message, but not necessarily something which would invite the kind of reaction which we saw from the Indian side, the unexpected death of soldiers on both sides in the Galwan incident, the fact that the Indian side, despite the inclement weather, despite the huge cost involved, did manage to deploy very large forces along the LSE, which again changed the ground situation in a sense. And plus what happened on the Kailash range. So for the Chinese, you draw up a certain script. If things do not go according to script, sometimes, it unsettles the other side, because they don't always have a kind of a fallback position. The fact that the Indian side also reacted on the economic and trade side, this perhaps was also not something which was anticipated, because in the past, these have not been allowed to interfere with what is a very dynamic and growing commercial and economic relationship. This time, that did not prove to be the case. So if you are sitting in Beijing and you planned this move, what have you managed to achieve? In fact, not only have you not been able to achieve the minimal sort of rap on the knuckles of the Indians, but you have invited reactions which not only affect the India-China relationship, but they also affect the broader geopolitical situation in Asia. So I think from that point of view, this is in a sense recognizing that not much is to be gained by continuing this. So better, find a honorable and perhaps a respectful way out of the situation.
And it suits both sides. You mentioned the economic countermeasures. In fact, the government banned all numbers of apps from China, has put all kinds of restrictions on a number of investments into India from China. Also, we saw a go slow, if you like, on imports from China. Did these economic measures have some resonance? And if I may ask, in the future, can we restore all of these? Should they be all restored? How can trade and investment with China, which has also been a problem between the two countries, be calibrated in the future?
Number one, I think the economic and commercial side of this whole set of developments is certainly noteworthy, because as I said, from what I understand of Chinese calculations, the economic and trade reaction from the Indian side was perhaps unexpected. And you would have seen on numerous occasions the Chinese side, even at the official level, conveying that, the Indian side should not link the economic and trade relationship with, the border situation. I mean, that may have been unrealistic, but it clearly reflected that they did not want to see that connection. So that did play a part, and I think it is a part of the perhaps the overall deal between the two countries, because I see reports that some of the investment proposals from the Chinese side which were held up perhaps are on the verge of being cleared. There was a specific instance of the Great Wall vehicle company from China taking over the unit, General Motors unit, which it had purchased, but was not allowed to, actually start operations here. If that is going to be cleared, that seems to suggest that a part of the overall deal between the two sides may also be that perhaps we can begin the process of, perhaps untangling the commercial and economic issue. But from the Indian perspective, let me say this, that there is no going back to the relationship in different domains as prevailed before the April incidents. I don't think there is any going back. India-China relations cannot just go back as if all this had not happened. So there will be greater wariness on the part of the Indian side, not only with respect to the security relationship, but it will also be there very much with regard to the economic and trade relationship. So while the Indian side may certainly perhaps unlock some of the deals which were perhaps in the pipeline, but I would imagine that going forward, it cannot be business as usual. I think we are past that now.
I do want to ask about that, because while you do say that it is not possible to go back to what ties were in the future, we saw post-Doklam, in fact, a new mechanism was built between the two sides, that of the two leaders actually meeting, and they met in Wuhan, they met in Mamallapuram, they spent hours together. Clearly, that conversation has been suspended for the last year. We've not seen even a phone call between the two leaders since the standoff began. But do you foresee that if they do come back, or if relations are reestablished in some way, a new mechanism could emerge? And what would that be?
It depends upon how smoothly the process of disengagement proceeds, because I think, as I said, we are right in the first phase. We have seen from past experience that, our expectations are not always met as far as the, ground situation is concerned. The Chinese managed to somehow outflank, whatever has been agreed upon. So a great deal will depend upon how this process of disengagement proceeds. So it is not realistic to think that the two sides will be able to reach a degree of mutual trust and confidence in the near future, which would enable them to pick up things like the summit process that we had built up over years. I mean, we talked about the informal summits, the two informal summits, which were quite unusual. But, for quite a few years, there has been a tradition of bilateral summits between the leaders of the two countries. And also, they're meeting on the sidelines of various kinds of regional meetings or international meetings. So, in fact, the leader-to-leader engagement, not only between Mr. Modi and Xi Jinping, but even earlier, there has been a tradition of, the leaders meeting all the time. And that played an important role in keeping the relationship on an even keel. Now, obviously, that has been disrupted. And I'm not very sure that we can get back to that anytime soon. So there will be, to my mind, there will be some gap in that respect.
Thanks so much for joining us. If you haven't already read Shyam Saran's book, How India Sees the World from Kautilya to Modi, the 21st Century, you must do so now. But from the team here at the Hindu's In Focus podcast, that's all we have time for. Thanks for listening.
In Focus will be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.